Picture a pin from 1939 that reads, "I have seen the future." Millions of Americans wore these after visiting General Motors' Futurama exhibit at the World's Fair, marveling at gleaming highways and radio-controlled cars promised for 1960. But here's what those visitors didn't grasp. They weren't witnessing a prediction. They were being sold a product. Within decades, expressways would slice through neighborhoods, pedestrians would lose their streets, and over 3.7 million Americans would die in car crashes. The corporations weren't forecasting the future, they were manufacturing it. Fast forward to today. Silicon Valley's elite are pitching their own transportation visions, and the pattern feels uncomfortably familiar. Elon Musk promises salvation through electric cars and underground tunnels. Travis Kalanick imagines fleets of automated taxis. Google's founders dream of autonomous pods gliding through cities. Like that 1939 World's Fair, these visions are polished, seductive, and fundamentally flawed. They're not solving our transportation crisis, they're repackaging it with a tech-friendly aesthetic while deepening the same inequities that car culture created a century ago. Between 1900 and 1920, cars multiplied from 8,000 to 8 million. In just 4 years after World War I, more Americans died on streets than in European trenches. Cities mourned publicly. Mothers who lost children became Gold Star Mothers, the same honor given to war bereaved. Detroit tolled bells 8 times daily for traffic deaths. Newspapers called driver killings murder, a far cry from today's victim blaming. By 1923, over 10% of Cincinnati residents demanded speed limiters. The auto industry fought back, reframing safety as anti-progress. Behind the scenes, General Motors, Standard Oil, and Firestone formed national city lines to dismantle America's streetcar networks. The 1956 Federal Aid Highway Act delivered the killing blow, $25 billion for 41,000 miles of highways deliberately routed through black neighborhoods under the guise of removing blight. FHA mortgage insurance promoted car-dependent suburbs while enabling redlining. Zoning laws separated homes from workplaces, making car ownership mandatory. The result? A transportation system now killing 1.3 million people annually worldwide. Silicon Valley's transportation solutions reflect a worldview rooted in California's counterculture, libertarian politics, and venture capital, revealing why tech elites propose ideas serving almost no one but themselves. The internet wasn't born from entrepreneurial genius. It emerged from military and public research. ARPANET connected university researchers in the 1960s using Defense Department funding. By the late 1980s, the National Science Foundation had invested roughly $200 million in NSFNet. Then, the Clinton administration privatized control in 1995, and tech entrepreneurs claimed credit for what taxpayers funded. Touchscreens, GPS, batteries, cellular networks, all emerged from public research. Apple received early support from the Small Business Investment Company. Google's algorithm came from NSF-funded Stanford research. Elon Musk's companies have received billions in subsidies. Yet these entrepreneurs position themselves as self-made visionaries. Tech leaders suffer from what transit planner Jarrett Walker calls elite projection, assuming what works for privileged people benefits everyone. Evgeny Morozov terms their approach technological solutionism, obsession with flashy fixes without understanding root causes. When you're a billionaire frustrated by traffic, you don't imagine better buses. You imagine private tunnels. Electric vehicles are marketed as climate saviors, but this narrative crumbles under scrutiny. They competed with internal combustion engines in the early 1900s, quieter, smoother, easier to start. But they couldn't compete with gas-powered cars perceived as more masculine. The 1973 oil shock and documentaries like An Inconvenient Truth positioned electric vehicles as individual climate solutions, conveniently shifting responsibility from governments and corporations to consumers. Here's what those narratives ignore. Electric vehicles only appear green when you focus narrowly on tailpipe emissions. In 2019, Tesla, Apple, Google, Dell, and Microsoft faced a lawsuit from Congolese families alleging they enabled child labor in cobalt mines. Approximately 40,000 children under 15 work in these mines, causing severe environmental contamination. Electric vehicle batteries require aluminum, copper, manganese, rare earth elements, cobalt, lithium, nickel, and graphite. Demand could increase over 4,000% by 2040, potentially exceeding existing reserves. Less than a few percent of lithium is currently recycled. Norway leads in electric vehicle adoption through government incentives, but benefits flow disproportionately to wealthy people. Subsidies for a single Tesla Model X owner in 2016 could have provided 30,000 trips on Oslo's public transit. In 1914, jitneys emerged as flexible alternatives to fixed transit, mostly Ford Model Ts with variable routes and fares. Few drivers profited due to vehicle costs and maintenance. Sound familiar? In 2016, Uber co-founder Travis Kalanick reframed jitneys as innovations destroyed by taxi monopolies, omitting their downsides, labor exploitation, accidents, and lost tax revenue. Uber portrayed taxi regulations as cronyism, ignoring their origins. During the Great Depression, unemployed workers flooded taxi driving, nearly doubling vehicle numbers. Oversupply triggered rate wars that slashed prices and incomes. By the late 1930s, governments capped taxi numbers and regulated fares, not to protect monopolies, but to create livable working conditions and manageable traffic. Despite promises of reduced congestion, Uber worsened it dramatically. San Francisco's congestion increased 62% between 2010 and 2016, with ride-hailing the biggest factor. Studies found 54% of trips would otherwise have used transit, cycling, or walking, while Uber trips create 69% more pollution when accounting for this modal shift. Taxi drivers suffered catastrophically. Many carried enormous medallion debts and couldn't compete with Uber's subsidized fares. In 2018 alone, 8 New York City drivers committed suicide. Uber mimicked Amazon's growth strategy, prioritizing expansion over profits, but lacked Amazon's crucial advantage, economies of scale. While Amazon reduced costs through efficient logistics, Uber couldn't because 85% of costs come from drivers, vehicles, and fuel. This explains Uber's persistent losses, including $6.77 billion in 2020. In 2012, Sergey Brin predicted self-driving cars within 5 years. By 2014, Elon Musk launched Tesla's Autopilot, and Uber's Travis Kalanick planned to replace human drivers, noting, "The reason Uber could be expensive is you're paying for the other dude in the car." Such promises weren't new. In the 1920s-30s, phantom autos amazed audiences. GM's 1939 Futurama featured radio-controlled vehicles supposedly arriving by 1960. Problems emerged immediately. In 2011, Google's Anthony Lewandowski disabled safety protocols during a demonstration where his autonomous Prius forced a Camry onto the shoulder. Former executives later revealed over a dozen crashes, at least 3 serious, hidden while Brin touted safety. On March 18, 2018, an Uber self-driving car killed Elaine Herzberg in Tempe, cycling between classifying her as vehicle, bicycle, or unknown object. Meanwhile, Houston spent $3 billion expanding the Caddy Freeway to 23 lanes. Within years, 85% of commuters faced longer travel times. Economists discovered the fundamental law of road congestion. When cities increase highway capacity, driving increases proportionally. This induced demand perpetuates worsening traffic despite expansion. Dismissing public transit as dangerous, wealthy tech executives proposed exclusive solutions. Elon Musk's 2016 tweet about tunnels beneath Los Angeles led to a test tunnel that, by 2018, reached only 53 miles an hour and felt like riding on a dirt road. Las Vegas's 1.7-mile tunnel featured human-driven Teslas crawling at 35 miles an hour, far from the autonomous high-speed system promised. Uber's 2016 Uber Air initiative targeted wealthy commuters escaping congestion Uber itself had worsened. Their 2019 Uber Copter service saved just 14 minutes over transit while costing $213 more. When Bird scattered scooters across San Francisco's sidewalks on March 28, 2018, without permission, residents recognized these companies were claiming public space. Bird's Louisville scooters lasted just 28.8 days, while researchers found dockless e-scooters produced 65% higher emissions than the transportation they replaced. Delivery robot startups brazenly claim sidewalks as business infrastructure. Starship's co-founder called sidewalks barely used, yet these robots blocked wheelchair users and confused guide dogs, leaving deaf-blind individuals stranded. The 1973 oil embargo split America and Europe. Carter invested in renewables, but U.S. corporate interests doubled down on cars. Europe chose differently. After Dutch cars killed 3,300 people yearly, including 400 children, groups like Stop de Kindermoord, Stop the Child Murder, demanded change. The oil crisis accelerated conservation, leading to car-free Sundays and bike lanes by the 1980s. After 2015 elections, Oslo's left-wing coalition banned private vehicles from the city center, removing 650 parking spaces for cycle lanes and play spaces. In 2016, Paris pedestrianized a Seine highway carrying 43,000 daily vehicles, cutting automobile use 20%. Better cities require challenging Silicon Valley's visions and capitalist infrastructure control. Remove housing, transport, and essential services from the market, running them as democratically accountable public services. Cities should halt transportation marketization, including congestion pricing. Instead, alter physical environments and provide services encouraging shifts from driving to transit, cycling, or walking. Transit must become transportation center, not a backstop for marginalized groups, with proper shelters, accessible stations, and fare-free service. The pandemic's first wave showed different possibilities. Streets opened for walking and cycling, air pollution plummeted. Some cities maintained changes, others restored car dominance. The path forward isn't autonomous vehicles. It's buses, trains, bicycles, and sidewalks. Mundane technologies that work when properly funded and democratically controlled. Transportation's future is about power. Who decides how cities work? Who benefits? These answers determine whether we build cities for people or profit.